What head coach in major sports history goes under 500 and mismanages the most important asset in the team's future and then gets extended?
What is up, everyone? Welcome to episode 4 of the Breaking the Plane podcast. As always, I'm your host, Burge, right here in the main chair. With me tonight, Joe Scher, my co-host, and our producer slash third chair, Mr. Kojak Stan, as it says on the video tonight, Brennan Allen. What's going on, guys? What's Kojak going on, guys? Stan. How you doing?
Listen, I'm a lot happier, damn it.
Yeah, it's not a suicide watch podcast anymore.
No,
it still is.
Oh man, we got a good one in store for you guys tonight. We have some games to break down from week 7 in the NFL, as well as some picks for week 8. And I think you might be surprised by some of our picks here. As always, we're brought to you in partnership with Primetime Productions. If you're on Twitter, give them a follow at Primetime Prods, and on their website, primetimeproductions.net. A lot of big things are happening there. Lots of giveaways going on right now. So be sure to check them out. Every sport is covered: Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, and of course, like us, NFL. Also have a college football podcast that just joined the network. So be sure, if you're a big college football fan, to check them out. We're continuing to grow. We're continuing to, you know, add more content to our site. So give us a follow. And yeah, quite a week 7 in the NFL here. There was quite a few games here, you know, that didn't go the way that we foresaw in our last episode when we got here to record. I think our picks last week kind of got eviscerated by these teams that decided to show up when we didn't think that they would. And my picks were awful. I'm going to start off by saying that my picks were terrible. I had Miami -2 as my lock last week. Let's just say they got their doors blown off by the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football in primetime. We'll get into that game a little bit later. Joe Scher's lock here, the Detroit Lions last week. Another one that just got absolutely blown out of the water.
Can't the only thing that locked me in was the closet, dude. I was so sad after that game, dude. It was like going across the ticker on the bottom, and I was just like, oh fuck. Because you're like, you're riding the high from the Pats game, like, yep. The Pats are playing out of their fucking mind. The looks like the Bills are about to give this one away. You're on cloud 9, and you look at that bottom ticker for 1 second, and you see your lock getting absolutely drilled.
Yes, that's not a good feeling to have. And yeah, I remember, I think I saw it was 21-0, and I just put in our group chat that we have. I'm like, oh, Joe, how's that lock looking this week?
Yeah, nice sharp pick.
You know, it's going to happen. We'll be better this week. I think we got some good ones for you this week, so we'll be better with that. But
or fade us. Fade us and tell us that you won. Like, when you fade us, show me your slip. I don't care. That's funny as hell.
Chirp the hell out of us. We're here for it. We're here for it. So I just want to get into this because we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot to talk about with what went on in week 7 and, you know, what we got coming up here in week 8. So we'll start off Joe Scher's pick. His lovely pick, lock of the week, the Detroit Lions visiting the Baltimore Ravens. And this wasn't even a game. It was 28-0 at half. It was 35-0 before the Lions even scored. All right. Final score of the game was 38-6 Baltimore. And I'm going to start off by saying I'm a big believer in what the Lions are doing this year. I want them to win the Super Bowl if my Patriots don't get there, which they're not going to. We'll get into that in a little bit. But
you know,
it's just one of those games. I think it was I think the Detroit Lions might have gone in maybe feeling themselves a little too much. I mean, we all were feeling them hard last week. If you listened to our episode last week, we were all basically on our knees for everything the Detroit Lions are doing. And
I was on my knees so Dan Campbell would not bite them off.
Exactly. They didn't show up to play in this game. Let's be real. I mean, you can't even blame it really on injuries at this point. I know they were down their number one running back in David Montgomery in this one. Fantasy talk later on. I'll get into that. But yeah, Lamar Jackson had himself a day. threw for 357 and three touchdowns, only threw six incompletions in this game. And you know, their running game was effective with Gus Edwards, and it seemed like everybody was getting involved with a catch in the offense. And it's not something that we've seen from Lamar Jackson, really a true threat in the passing game, you know, this year yet. On the Lions side, they just didn't have it. They didn't have their running game like, you know, they were relying on with David Montgomery out. They only rushed the ball 14 times, and Jared Goff did throw an interception, was sacked five times in this game. And it just was like almost a no-show performance from the Detroit Lions. What are your thoughts, Joe?
I think, looking back on it, Baltimore was due. They had a couple like lackluster offensive performances a couple weeks prior. They averaged almost five and a half yards on the per carry on the ground there. They're a great team from playing ahead. A lot of play action passes allowed Lamar Jackson to get really comfortable. Like you said, very efficient day. 21 of 27. And I think that another thing you said there is he was spreading the ball around. I mean, a defense can only do so much, can only cover so many guys, right? So when you have it going, when you can scheme different guys open and you can kind of work matchups any way you want, and then you also have like a top, whatever, 5-6 quarterback in the league, it's all going to work in your favor. Detroit was riding high. I think that sometimes these emotional teams, I think we talked about that last week, how like Detroit, one of the reasons Detroit is so fun to watch is their buy-in factor and how hard they play. And I think that sometimes that doesn't travel. You know what I mean? Sometimes it just doesn't travel. And I think you're going up against a Baltimore Ravens team who's just as physical as the Lions. They're kind of a hard-nosed, run-first football team. So it's kind of a perfect disaster for my pick and the Lions itself. I mean, I thought getting three on the road, I thought that would be a tough game. I looked at it as usually a defense, an elite defensive unit usually triumphs over an elite offensive unit. The Lions had the number one run defense going into this game, and the Ravens had one of the top run offenses going into this game. So usually when a matchup like that happens, I usually try to lean defense, mm-hmm. and especially if you're getting the points on the road when you're expecting a closer game. Obviously, none of that matters now. Lamar Jackson was on fire. They got out to an early lead, which allowed them to hit the play action plays. Lamar only has, I think it was 29 play action attempts before this game, and I think that they increased. I think they had like almost a third of that in this game. I think they had like 10, 12 play action attempts in this game, which is almost half of their passing attempts. Lamar looks good. I said a couple weeks ago that I thought he was going to come out swinging this year with the new contract. Maybe it's taken them a little bit of time. I know they got some new pieces. But yeah, I mean, Mark Andrews is still good. Gus Edwards is still good. Like, I think that as long as you have an elite quarterback, you have an opportunity to win games. And when you're on fire and clicking on all cylinders, is what it looks like on Sunday in Baltimore.
Absolutely. And you know, when you get a one reception, 80 yards performance out of your running back, you're having a day out there. I mean, even on the ground game, they averaged 5.4 yards per carry in this one. Gus Edwards, Justice Hill, and Lamar Jackson all were having themselves a day. I mean, Justice Hill averaged 11.5 yards a carry on his four carries. I mean, that's a recipe for success, you know, especially in today's NFL where...
Dude, their fullback had two receptions for 30 yards.
I know. What are we doing here? I know. I mean, you count the guys. I mean, it seems like everybody had a reception in this one. Gus Edwards, Dave Flowers. Odell Beckham.
I'm looking at his kind of like player profile right now. He's going to be a problem for a really, really long time.
And it's something that this Baltimore Ravens team has been sorely missing over the last few years for Lamar. They haven't really had a legitimate target outside of the tight end, Mark Andrews. He's been like the only target there that has consistently shown up on a weekly basis. And if Zay Flowers has contributed quite a bit in this first, we'll say, half of the season. I know we're not there yet, but we'll call it the half of the season. He's shown up, and he's well on his way to an offensive rookie of the year campaign. Getting Odell Beckham Jr. involved, I mean, he led the team with five receptions in this one, but he only had 49 yards. Zay Flowers had 75.
I think honestly, Odell needs to evolve into like a giant, or not a giant, but like a big slot, big outside slot, big outside possession receiver, not a slot receiver, but a possession receiver. I think he's shown some flashes. He still has the athleticism, but I think his hands and his catch radius should be what he's leaning on right now. And I think it's working perfect for, because some of those receptions were like little over the middle, like chain movers, second, third down, 7-8 yard kind of quick hitters. And then they have Zay Flowers, who's just an excellent route runner, and then like an amazing run after catch guy. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I think that it's kind of nice seeing Odell kind of evolve a little bit as a player.
Absolutely. I mean, he has to. He's getting older, so he's got to kind of change his game a bit. And, you know, in order to stay in the league, you got to kind of adapt and find something that works for you with a certain system, a certain scheme, a certain team, given the personnel and all that. How'd you feel about Nelson Aguilar catching the touchdown in this one? How'd that make you feel?
I don't know. It's just like, yeah, it just makes me so angry. I don't know. My buddy, I have a buddy who like has like this car detailing business, and Aguilar was one of his clients. And he said he was like, nice, really nice car, wicked nice guy. So I don't want to disparage the dude because he's like actually a good guy, but God damn, is he bad at football sometimes, dude? That one, was it last week or the week before, the drop that he had?
Oh, yeah, it was awful.
It was Devontae Parker-esque. It was, it baffles me sometimes how bad at catching a football these wide receivers and like pass catchers in the NFL could be when that's literally your job. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, imagine absolutely. Imagine if somebody tried to make me like a head chef at a restaurant. Be like, all right, you're the head chef at this restaurant. Your one job is to cook. All right, what's the worst thing in your repertoire? I'm like, I can't cook. I'm like, that's yeah. That's Nelson Aguilar. He's like, you're a wide receiver. All you have to do is catch the ball. He's like, all right, that's good because I can't do that. I don't know. And he had that one catch on the Patriots where he like mossed the guy, like reached over in front of him and caught it. And then like half the time it hits him in the hands and he doesn't make the catch. We got Aguilar.
I was just going to say that. Yep.
Every time.
Reference that. The Philadelphia time, Eagles though. Meme there. Yep. That was what I was going to reference, but you know,
how many, receive 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different receivers with receptions.
That's huge. And that's the recipe for success.
You have 9 receivers with receptions. Yeah. And you have 3 different receivers with 6 plus targets. That's the definition of spreading the ball around.
Absolutely. And, you know, being Patriots fans, we saw, you know, the artist at work. When it came to that over the last 20 years, Brady would consistently spread the ball around. Didn't matter who you were. As long as you were catching the ball and in the place you were supposed to be, he would throw you the ball. Didn't matter who it was. It didn't matter, you know, what your name was. He'd get you the ball if he trusted you. And it seems like maybe Lamar is starting to kind of get a little bit of that. I mean, I'd like to see it for more than one game to see if he can actually be that passing type quarterback. I mean, everybody labels him a running back. And today, obviously, on Sunday, he was absolutely the opposite of that. I mean, he did carry the ball 9 times, but he only went for 36 yards. He did score a touchdown. His only long run was 10 yards. So it's not like he had a massive run in there. It'll be interesting to see how his game evolves going forward. And if he can put that kind of performance together on a weekly basis, the Ravens are going to be a team that you got to really kind of watch out for. And especially in that AFC North, that's kind of wide open, I would say, at this point, with Cincinnati, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. Pittsburgh's making a little bit of noise. I'm not really a buyer in them just yet. I think they're a team that's overachieving, a bad team that's finding a way to win games. But at the end of the day,
Tomlin's got it going right now. I think he's an excellent coach.
That's an absolute way that you can build success for your team. And we'll, you know, I don't know if we're going to get much into the Steelers talk this week, but I'm sure, you know, in the coming weeks, if they continue doing what they're doing, we're going to get into it. I want to get back to the Lions a little bit here and this kind of no-show performance, if you want to call it that. I mean, you want to talk about a tale of two offenses in this game, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens spreading the ball around. Jared Goff and the Lions kind of fixated on a couple of receivers. You fixated on Amon-Ra St. Brown, my boy. I love that guy. His running back, Jahir Gibbs, and then Sam Laporta, the tight end. I mean, between the two of them.
He looks pretty good, dude. He looks like a steal.
The tight end, it looks great. Don't get me wrong. But he had 33 completions. 28 of them went to those three guys.
Yeah. Amon-Ra St. Brown had 19 targets. That's
that's a lot. And for my fantasy team, I love it. But for a you know, a recipe for success for an NFL team, that's not really a recipe for success.
I really don't think. Yeah, I mean, you make a lot of good points there, but I don't think. I don't know. I think Detroit lost this game on defense. I mean, you're not going to win a lot of games in the NFL giving up 38 points, especially when you're on the road. But I mean, dude, I think it was more. I mean, they were down so early they couldn't get their. I don't want to say a front running team, but they're a run first play action team. Like, I think Jared Goff is really good, and Jared Goff got sacked 5 times. Like, he's gonna he's a lead footed gunslinger. He's not gonna be running around making plays. He's not gonna be avoiding the rush. He needs to be upright the entire game. And dude, they averaged 6 yards a rush. Dude, Jahmyr Gibbs had 11 carries for 68 yards and a touchdown. Like, that's good enough. You know what I mean? And I think that the game got away from them early. They had to play from behind, which forced the ball into Jared Goff's hands without being able to run the play action and kind of set up the pass with the run. And that gets you into targeting the same receiver 19 times. 13 receptions for 102 yards isn't great efficiency. You know what I mean? That's under 8 yards of reception. And his long is 15 yards. And then, dude, and you go over to the Ravens side, they have Gus Edwards with the 80-yard reception. Zay Flowers with the 46-yard receptions. Mark Andrews, 22. Odell, 22. Rashard Bateman had a 20-yard reception. Pat Ricard had a 28-yard reception. There's no explosive plays coming out of this. There's no explosive plays coming out of this Detroit offense, and I think that really hampered them. Because, I mean, when you're going 3 and out and then you're getting absolutely obliterated on defense and then coming back and going 3 and out again, or maybe even possessing the ball for, like, a couple first downs, like, he had 20 incompletions in the game. That's gonna suck up a lot of time that the defense has to be on the field, that you're not putting their defense on the field, and it just snowballs from there.
Absolutely. 5.4 yards per completion for Jared Goff in this one. That's not a recipe for success in the NFL. And I'm going to pose this question to you, as you know, you and I, we've talked about this offline, but we're buyers into what the Lions are doing. Does this concern you about the Lions' prospects moving forward this season?
No, I it doesn't. First of all, like, we have to, like, dude, the Ravens are good. The Ravens are habitually a top half AFC team, habitual play. I don't want to say Super Bowl, but they're a good team. They have a good coach. They have good structure. They have good players. Been good for a while. They were on this. They were a little bit. They were misfiring out of the gate a little bit. I think they got that ironed out, and I think that. Sometimes you just have these weeks on the road. One of your position groups doesn't show up. Your front seven doesn't show up. You get run all over for 146 yards, 5.5 yards a carry. You can't get you're chasing the game the whole way. And Detroit's just not set up that way. The one of the reasons why they're one of the best teams against the run is because they're getting up on people and they're forcing them into throwing, and then they're not giving up the 30-40 touches to running backs. So I mean, it does shake my confidence a little bit. I don't think either of us had delusions of grandeur about Jared Goff. I think we know exactly what he is. He's a good quarterback on a good team, which kind of makes him look a little bit better and inflates his stats a little bit. But I think they're a playoff team. I think they're going to be vying for a playoff spot. Hopefully, I'd love to see this team get some kind of, like, awesome matchup in the playoffs with, like, maybe the Eagles or something like that. Just because I think that the Eagles or the 49ers, I think they could take one of them down. I think Detroit doesn't seem like a team that's going to be a great, like, front runner, or I don't want to say front runner, but a great favorite, a great team that people are picking. But I think as a scrappy underdog, I think they'll always be lethal. But I think with this game, it's one of those ones where the opposition got out in front. You got out of your comfort zone so early that there's really not a lot of coming back from it.
Absolutely. And I'm kind of going to share the same sentiment on that. I think that this might have been a game where the Lions get their ego checked at the door, if you want to call it that. They, you know, were riding high going into this one, 5-1. Now they're 5-2. They drop. They get their pants blown off in Baltimore. I like to see them rebound next week. I'm not ready to write them off yet. And I'm, as a fan, wanting to see this team succeed after what that city has gone through over the last, you know, 60, 70 years of never seeing a really good football, seeing some really good players come through like Barry Sanders and not getting to, you know, really make noise Megatron. In the playoffs. Yeah, Megatron's another one that comes to mind. Absolutely. And I want to see them make some noise. They got Monday Night Football next week against the Las Vegas Raiders. I like them to win that game. Next week is not one of my picks, but I like them to, you know, kind of right the ship to move forward. Baltimore goes to visit the Cardinals next week. I like them to continue rolling. I don't see the Cardinals being able to really withstand Baltimore. And I think Baltimore has a chance to really kind of assert themselves. If they win another one, go 6-2, you're really talking about them going forward.
Especially in that AFC North where you've got, I mean, the Steelers are no lock. Cincinnati mm-hmm. hasn't been playing well. They're on the come a little bit. But yeah. Yeah, I think this is one of those classic game. Two good teams play. One good team has a good day. Mm-hmm. One good team has a bad day. And I think that maybe people blow it out of proportion. But everybody knows all the BTP, all the millions of BTP loyal fans. They know that this is a pro Lions podcast, so we're not going to bury them just yet.
Not yet. We're not there yet. But if you want to talk about a team that might have got their ego checked at the door, we're going to move on to the Buffalo Bills visiting Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass, taking on the New England Patriots. And Buffalo kind of walked in here. My guess is coming in against a 1-5 Patriots team, a team that looked absolutely atrocious the last 3 weeks. I don't think that here on the BTP podcast that we've kind of held anything back talking about this Patriots team and how disappointing they've been over the last 3 weeks. Maybe thought they were going to come in, have an easy walk to win like they have over the past couple of years. Josh Allen was going to do his thing, and they were going to win. End of the day, Patriots come out with the victory in the last seconds of this game, 29-25 over the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to lead off with saying I think the Patriots were in control of this game the entire way. They, up until the end of the game where there was a bad turnover by Kendrick Bourne with a fumble, I thought that
Did you see his comment on Hunter Henry's Instagram post?
I didn't.
Henry was like posted something. He was like drinking a high noon or whatever. And Bourne commented, like referencing his fumble. He commented, "Thanks for saving my career, bro."
Yeah. That's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I mean, the Patriots in this game, obviously they came in with nothing to lose. The Patriots had, you know, their season. You could call their season on the line, but you know, we'll get into it in a little bit, talking about, you know, where the outlook is for that team. But a team like Buffalo has come in here and has absolutely dominated the Patriots over the last 3 years, to my dismay. As it's been
two punts in three games, something like that.
Dude, it was brutal. Yeah. You had the game in the playoffs where they scored touchdowns in every single offensive drive. You had the only win that the Patriots have had post Tom Brady here in New England was the weather game, where basically I think the Patriots threw the ball three times in that game and they just ran the ball.
Mac Jones was down their throat.
And they just ran the ball and they ended up coming out of Buffalo with a victory there. Felt good as a Patriots fan for me. I hate the Buffalo Bills. I've made no secret of that here on the BTP podcast. Really wanted, I've actually went to two Buffalo Bills Patriots games over the last 2 years. Watching them get their doors blown off at Gillette Stadium, thinking that they had a shot to win the game. Wish I was there this weekend. I'm not going to lie to you. But it seemed like a little bit of a different team on the New England side. And we'll get into the Buffalo side in a little bit, but it seemed like a little bit of a different team. They protected the quarterback better. They seemed in sync on offense. And they made the plays they needed to when they needed to on the defensive side. The defense wasn't great in this one, but they did what they had to do when they needed to do it. And you can attribute the play to injuries or whatever. I don't count injuries as an excuse. You know, check that, Buffalo Bills fans. Don't be coming at me saying all your team is hurt. But it's not an excuse. Mac Jones only threw 5 incompletions in this game. He was 25 of 30 for 272 and 2 touchdowns. They didn't really run the ball well, which I found kind of surprising considering what we thought the team was going to be this year.
It's kind of like just well enough to be effective.
They did enough. They were averaging just under, I want to say just about 4 yards a carry in this one. Zeke Elliott did punch in a touchdown. And I think the biggest takeaway for me on the offensive side of the ball for the New England Patriots in this one was, A, the offensive line protected Mac. they moved Onwenu to right tackle, which I think all of us were, at least me, I won't speak for you, Joe, but for me, I've been calling for that.
What was the first comment I made about the game? We were on the course for the first quarter, and as soon as I turned on the game, I was like, 71 is at right tackle. That is a win for an objective win for Patriots fans everywhere.
I mean, we've been talking about this for years now. Like, why are we playing him at guard? I mean, I think his first season here, he played right tackle, and he was incredible. And then the next
year, he's massive. He's not built like a guard.
And then they moved him inside for whatever reason, and it kind of went downhill. So I hope that they keep him there. I'd love to see them extend him as a right tackle because I really believe he can be effective in that position. Second thing was, how about Pop Douglas in this one? I mean, he only had 4 catches for 54 yards, but you noticed every single one of those catches.
Yeah, I think he had two. He drew 2 PIs as well. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, very efficient game.
Absolutely talented. He's the most talented receiver in that room, as far as I'm concerned. And maybe Kendrick Bourne gives him a run for his money, but you know, we'll see what happens. I want to see if he gets benched again, dude. I'm gonna lose my mind. He absolutely cannot get benched. He absolutely cannot get benched. And you know, another big surprise, Farrell Brown, the tight end. Happened a couple weeks ago where he came out of nowhere, had a massive catch. He had 2 receptions, 51 yards in this one.
Dude, that one late in the game over the back shoulder was a great throw by Mac under pressure and a great adjustment by the receiver. I don't know. I don't know. You got 3 legitimate tight ends right now. I don't want to go too crazy on the Farrell Brown shit, but like, I think it was his first reception. He was like stepping out of tackles and running guys over and shit. And I was like, who the fuck is him? Like, dude, he's played for like 3 or 4 teams and he's finally getting some run. He's big. He looks intimidating. He's a really good blocker. And if you hit him in the frame, he's going to catch it.
Absolutely. And you know, he can play that kind of that role. That is that stereotypical Patriots role where you want a guy that can sit in there and act like a 7th offensive lineman or 6th offensive lineman, but he can also go out there and catch the ball. So
Tim Wright. Tim Wright was a huge piece of a Super Bowl team.
Absolutely. And I love that acquisition when it happened. And he was only here for 1 year, but he fucking filled that role beautifully. My third point here, Mac Jones had himself a day. Like, he was standing in the pocket. You can argue that he made some mistakes and that were covered up by either penalty.
He had a fucking big boy, legitimate 4th quarter. I will say that. He was the difference in the 4th quarter. Because usually every time we talk about Mac, it's oh this, oh that. No, Mac had Trent Brown out for a series. His best 2 players on offense were Kendrick Bourne and Pop Douglas. Not absolute world beaters. Very good serviceable players. One's a rookie. One's, I would say, an above average player. But Mac was the difference.
Absolutely. And, you know, some of those throws that he made, dude, he was standing in the pocket. He stood in the pocket, waited, made the throw, stepped into the throw, and then took the hit. That's what we need to see. Like, you know,
the one to pop on the goal line, the one to Hunter Henry and the last drive there after the Stevenson run and catch. Yeah.
He seemed poised back there. Something we haven't seen over the last month, which is
that goes back into the offensive line discussion though. That's
absolutely.
It shows how much of a mistake that was by Bill Belichick to let that get to that point.
I won't disagree with you on that at all. And I hope that they continue with this. With this setup on offensive line, I think City So was the guard that was in there. I think he held his own. Yeah, I think I saw some film today that he, you know, on the first contact or the first push, he got pushed back, but he recovered and he was able to hold his ground. You know, he may get pushed back at first, but like at that point, he buckles down and you don't feel the pressure from him. Onwenu at right tackle, again, like I said, I don't want to beat the dead horse on it, but we've been saying that for years. Keep him at right tackle. He's built like it. He'll succeed there. He was not succeeding at guard. He was having his share of problems on that offensive line the last 3 weeks playing guard. So keep him there.
Yeah, he was like the number one Pro Football Focus ranked guard last year. And then I don't know if it's his injury, but it's like you think if you put him on right tackle, he'd be a little bit more of an island and the mobility would be a little bit more – he would need his mobility a little bit more, but
– sure.
I don't know. He looked really, really good. Really, really good out there on right tackle.
You know, and Trent Brown on the other side, as long as he can stay healthy, he had himself a really good day too. They, for the most part, protected Mac Jones very well. And obviously they did have some help. There was a strip sack late in that game where he got hit. Mac Jones fumbled the ball, but there was a defensive holding downfield, so they kind of got bailed out on that.
And I think we recovered it too, or the offensive lineman recovered it, right? Yeah, okay.
They did, but you were looking at a much different, you know, down and distance situation off that. So absolutely a I don't want to call it a perfect performance from the Patriots, but they had the performance that they needed to have when they needed to have it. And you could speak to it from a confidence, mental, you know, whatever you want to call it, standpoint. But a massive win like this against a divisional opponent that has owned you over the last 3 years has an opportunity to kind of spark, hey, maybe what their coaches are doing, what we're trying to do can work. And
maybe we can believe in the quarterback.
Absolutely. And you, I don't know if you saw the celebration after the game, all those guys coming up to, you know, Mac Jones. Jabril Peppers is a guy that
I would die. Jabril, if you're listening, I will die for you. I will do anything.
Absolutely. He's the next leader of that defense. Absolutely. I figure he is. He's
especially with Judon out.
Yes. I love the way that he plays. He plays hard, he hits hard, and he's always around to play.
He shows up.
He did have a missed tackle in this one that, you know, would be one of my downsides from the Patriots standpoint in this game. They were missing a ton of tackles that really, really put them in a situation to actually have to go back and come back in this game, considering they led the entire way up until the last 2 minutes of the game.
Kyle Duggar kind of disappointed me on that one. He had a couple of
absolutely bad missed tackles. Kyle Duggar and then Miles Effing Bryant. Why is he on this team? That dude, like, always whiffing. It's just, that's a problem, and they got to correct that fast if they're gonna actually try to turn their season around here. They got a big matchup coming up against Miami next week, which we'll get into in our picks. But I want to circle back to the Buffalo side of things. If you're a Buffalo Bills fan, Joe, are you a little bit worried about this team for the rest of the season?
Yeah, that's actually a really good segue into kind of like what I wanted to kind of like preface this game or kind of talk about for this game. You talked a lot about the Patriots, made a lot of valid points. I do agree. This is the offense's best performance and Mac's best performance of the year. I know that maybe the raw stats don't bear it out, but I weigh fourth quarter passing stats and I weigh how a quarterback plays when they need it the most a lot heavier than any kind of inflated like yardage or touchdown stats that are from any other point in the game. And I think his best quarter and his best time in the game was exactly when they needed it. But we on this podcast, I mean, I at least kind of sometimes I categorize a game or you could say categorize a game as like, who does it tell you more about? And if you put a gun to my head, this game says more about the Bills than it says about the Pats.
I agree.
The Patriots know the Bills so well, and they exploited everything that the Bills suck at. So the Bills averaged under 3.5 yards a carry. Stephon Diggs had 12 targets, 6 receptions for 58 yards. And that's J.C. Jackson, Prima, and Jack Jones kind of shutting him down. So when you look at it, they shut down Diggs. You let Kincaid get his. That's fine. But you have James Cook, who's a running back with 3 receptions for 40 yards. And then after that, you got Khalil Shakir, 4 receptions, 35 yards. Latavius Murray, 2 receptions, 20 yards. Dawson Knox, 1 for 10. Gabe Davis, 1 for 6. Trent Sherfield, 1 for 5. Like, you shut down Stephon Diggs, you force Josh Allen into a situation where he has to do everything, and you saw it, dude. He threw an interception in the first quarter.
First play of the game.
Yeah, dude, his first one out the chute, dude. He probably saw Diggs in double coverage and threw it on the – and then literally just whipped over to the other side of the field and threw it right to Jabril Peppers. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, dude, Josh Allen had 7 rushing attempts for 17 yards. A couple of those, I think at least 1 or 2 of those were pretty much sacks that he just got over the line of scrimmage, and they're counting it as a rushing attempt because it says they only sacked him once for 7 yards. And I think there was a couple times where I think they actually tackled them, but he just got to the line of scrimmage or beyond it, and they gave him a rushing attempt. But, dude, I know you said it right off the rip. Dude, the Bills defense is decimated by injuries. Mm-hmm. Dude, they had fucking guys I'd never heard of out there.
Never. They elevated practice squad guys, guys off the street. All three levels were banged up. They had front seven injuries. They had defensive back injuries. And once again, I think I said it before during the Jets or the Jacksonville game, dude, the Bills safeties, those two elites, they're getting old, bro. They're still good. They're still serviceable, but we saw with Devin McCourty here in New England, dude, we saw though there was, as a free safety or as a safety in general, you really only have to lose one step. You only have to lose one step and it gets exploited. The best part about McCourty's game, nobody got behind him. He had a great job getting to angles and stuff like that. And last year, he probably saw it himself and that's why he retired. It was just those little things where a guy would get another 15, 20 yards because he took a bad angle or he wasn't fast enough to achieve the angle that he had chose. And I think that it's going on with Poyer. And I think, I don't know. This game says, I think it's a positive sign for the Patriots. Like you said, Pop Douglas getting having five touches in this game with six targets and plus a 20-yard end around where he literally did a stop and start on a guy, and it was like they were playing different sports. It was a fun thing to watch. But he made a couple tough catches. That one catch that almost got stripped away from him in the middle of the field down by the goal line was an awesome catch, awesome throw. Another awesome catch on the goal line where he kind of twisted around and caught it over defender's back. I never want to see Juju Smith-Schuster in a Patriots uniform again. I think that if you go with Bourne and Douglas and then you go 12 personnel, I think that's your best offense for the Patriots right now. Ramondre Stevenson, I don't know what the hell's going on. He still doesn't look right when you hand the ball off. I mean, he did have six receptions for 51 yards. I know he had the long one at the end of the game, but I mean, that's where he's a dual threat back. I think what makes him so unique is his size as a dual threat back. He's very hard to take down. And I think when you get him out in space, just like they did on that last drive, I think he had like three or four broken tackles on the last drive and they were all linebackers and defensive backs, which is where he eats. If you get him to the second level, he's going to eat on anybody. But like, not to reiterate again, but you stop Stephon Diggs, you turn it into the Josh Allen show. He turns frantic. You make him, you rush him, you turn him into a mediocre quarterback. The Bills have no shot, especially with their teams as banged up as they are. You can have P shooter, quote unquote P shooter Mac Jones with a 127 rating on you. That's what's gonna happen.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. I think that, and just to add in, Dawson Knox for the Buffalo Bills is now injured. I think he's having wrist surgery, so he's going to be out for a period of time. Yeah, so just another injury to hit Buffalo. They're a team that I think that they have not done enough in the running game to surround Josh Allen with an actual running game. Because you give him an actual running game, that offense can be lethal. With Josh Allen's arm and scrambling ability, Stephon Diggs, although he is getting older, they still have Gabe Davis as a playmaker. Dalton Kincaid has looked good this year. So I think they have some pieces there. But again, right now, the way they're built, you shut down Stephon Diggs, something the Patriots haven't been able to do in the last 3 years. They haven't been able to do it. They finally did do it, and what happened? They finally got themselves a win. They did have to sweat it out a bit. Once Kendrick Bourne fumbled, I was like, all right, they're losing. This is the same Patriots. The season's over.
Oh, like, dude, when he fumbled, I was like, I almost turned the game off because you know how it's gonna end.
I was like, you got to be kidding me! And I'm like, all right, they let. I was like, let Buffalo score. They're at the 1 yard line or whatever. It's first and goal. I'm like, let them score so you have time to do something with it and give Mac a chance to finally another chance to have that one of those drives that could be a staple. And lo and behold, they scored and he had that drive. So I agree. I think it says a little bit more about Buffalo. I think Buffalo is a team that is going to make the playoffs this year, but I don't think they may not be an easy out, but I think that they're not going to contend for a Super Bowl. They're not going to get healthy enough. They don't have enough on offense. In my opinion, Josh Allen is, I think he still leads the league in turnovers. It's not a recipe for success.
Yeah, if I'm the Bills, I trade a first and second round pick to the Giants for Daboll and Saquon. I'm gonna say that on every dude. If you get Josh Allen back with Daboll and you get Saquon in that offense with Stephon Diggs and Dalton Kincaid, you are going to that offense would be fucking unstoppable. Imagine trying to defend a read option with Josh Allen and Saquon. Like, that's unbelievable.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And, you know, I believe personally that the AFC East is Miami's to lose at this point. I think we can kind of all agree on that. If it's, you know, if we're going to talk about who's going to win the divisions, you know, maybe that's a segment we can talk about maybe next week at the midway point of the season. Talk about who we think is going to win the division.
Oh,
maybe
let's do some superlatives next week.
Yes.
I'm down with that.
We'll plan on that.
We'll talk about how my lock lost outright, and then we'll talk about some superlatives.
Absolutely. So there's your teaser for next week's episode, but we still have a bit to talk about here. We'll talk about Miami. I'm talking about Miami winning the division. We'll move right into that game from last week. Miami Dolphins.
Oh, you don't want to talk about your little news dump before the game on Sunday?
Me?
Your fearless leader?
Oh, we can hit on that before we move on. Why don't we do that? It dropped before the games on Sunday that Bill Belichick had signed a contract extension with the New England Patriots before the season. Before the season started, a lucrative multi-year deal per rap sheet on Twitter came out. I'm here for it. I am here for it.
What head coach in major sports history goes under 500 and mismanages the most important asset in the team's future and then gets extended? They tell him, here's some more money. Keep doing your job. Makes no sense.
Legacy.
That's fine. Fire his ass. Give him the golden parachute. I don't give a fuck. It's so annoying, dude. Fuck you, Kraft. You're gonna spend on Bill. You're gonna give him another $40 million, but we can't spend another $10 million to go get DeAndre Hopkins. Are you kidding me? It's asset mismanagement. It's classic franchise mismanagement at its finest, dude. You said Tom Brady asked for the fucking Drew Brees contract. 2 years, $50 million, guaranteed. He walks off in the sunset. You don't give him that, but Bill Belichick, after a fucking 7-10 year, gets a contract extension. It's almost like Kraft is refusing to make the team better. And I'm not saying that I want Bill fired right now. This is a really good week for Bill. And honestly, this week, weeks like this and games like that is what breathes life back into Bill the coach. But there's gotta be some changes, dude. You can't just roll it back out next year. You can't start 1-5 every year. You can't. You're bad at something and somebody's like, I'm actually going to let you keep doing it and give you more money. It makes no sense. It doesn't make sense. Logically, it makes no sense. But if you look at the last 20 years and you look at the fact that he's brought me personally more joy than any human on earth besides my fucking wife, any man on earth has brought me. I just can't believe that Kraft is so hell-bent on keeping this together for so long. I'm like, dude, you have the 6 Super Bowls. Turn it over to your son. Make the legacy that you kept it going. Have a legacy like the Steelers or like the Ravens, where it's decades and decades and decades of being a model franchise. Look at the Steelers, dude. They've had 3 fucking coaches in their entire tenure. That's what Kraft wants to do. But if you keep letting people walk out the door because you keep extending Bill and you keep giving Bill all of this fucking power over the entire football operation, you're not going to nurture those young growths. Look at the 49ers systems. Look at the Washington systems. All of these young coaches from these systems are all over the league. Where are our coaches all over the league? Where are they? Where are they? Josh McDaniels and the Raiders, they suck. And then when they suck, they come back. Patricia sucked in Detroit, brought him back. Now he's signing contracts for guys. Now he's our offensive coordinator. Now he's our offensive line coach. That makes no fucking sense, dude. That makes no sense. And unless there's some shit written into that contract being like, you have to teach fucking Mayo how to do this shit. You have to do this. You have to do that. We're delegating some stuff. Okay, yeah, then it lessens the blow, but you got to rip the Band-Aid off, bro. You ripped a Band-Aid off with Tom Brady that was still a flesh wound 3 inches deep, but now you won't rip a Band-Aid off with Bill Belichick when it's literally scabbed over. All right, end rant.
Kojak, you got to clip that. You got to clip that shit. Dang, I don't know why you wanted to bring this up. Now I know why. Gotta get that off your chest, man. That was a good one. I like that.
That was incredible.
That was incredible. That was an incredible rant. Love it. Love it. I want Bill Belichick to finish his career in New England. At the end of the day, as a fan, as somebody who watched the last 20 plus years, I want him to finish his career here. I'm going to say that. I still think he has it as a coach. I will not dispute that at all.
If we had a chance of winning 10 games every fucking year, I would be like, I would be on your side. I said in the inaugural podcast that I will ride it with Bill until the fucking wheels fall off. Guess what the fuck happened the last 2 weeks before this win? The wheels fell off.
Have they fallen completely off yet, though? Can you really say that without seeing the whole season play out? Can you really say that?
Dude, we're two losses away from it being bad. I mean,
they're one loss away from it being that bad. But as we sit here today recording on the 24th of October, can you actually say that the wheels have completely fallen off?
I mean, it looked like it the last 2 weeks.
It did. I won't disagree with you. I won't disagree with you. But the season is not dead yet. And as a fan...
Oh, this season is dead. The season is dead.
I'm not there.
No, this win on Sunday negates what the season is about. The season's dead. We're not going to the Super Bowl. We're not going to make the fucking playoffs. We're not going to make noise. We might play spoiler at the end of the year. The only caveat that makes this fucking whole thing great is if I get to do the ayahuasca hut and the Patriots beat the Jets in week 18 and prevent them from going to the playoffs. So Aaron Rodgers starts that game and the Patriots beat them. And I go straight into the ayahuasca hut with a giant fucking smile on my face.
Okay. I still think he's got the game plan scheme side of these things, man. I still believe it. And, you know, maybe you can call me an old fart or whatever you want, but I will go. I always said before Tom Brady left New England that I would go 0-16 with these two at the helm. And that if that's how it ends, I'm happy.
No, my bird brain can't handle that.
Well, that maybe I'm just old and I actually saw some of the losing seasons before. I know you guys are a lot younger than me. I'll say I'm the old fart. I'm the old fart, Kojak. Old fart. All right.
It's even an old term. That's funny as hell.
No, I'm just going to say this. And before we get into the Miami talk that I teased a little bit a while ago before Joe decided to have an aneurysm on the recording here. if they beat Miami on Sunday and they upset Miami again, the whole conversation is going to change based on the schedule going forward. We'll get into that maybe next week after that game. We can revisit this. And again, I'm talking to you as someone talking today. I'm not predicting anything. I still have no expectations for them when I watch them. Am I going to get the New Orleans Saints game or am I going to get the Buffalo Bills game? You never know. And we'll see what happens next week against Miami. But Miami this week had themselves a Sunday night tilt against the Philadelphia Eagles, who were also 5-1. Both teams were 5-1 going into this one. And it just, you know, Philadelphia kind of owned them in this one, in my opinion. I think that the two losses that Miami has had this year, they haven't really looked great. And it's kind of
Miami hasn't beaten anybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I say something real quick before you get into anything crazy? Can everybody shut the fuck up about the tush push or the brotherly shove, whatever the fuck we want to call the play, whatever colloquial, whatever we want to call that? Can everybody shut the fuck up?
No.
Shut the fuck up. Don't let them into a first. Don't let them into a 1 yard to go situation or fucking stop them. Just shut the fuck up. There's one of two things you can do. You can shut the fuck up or you can stop them and prevent them from doing it. That's it. That's it. It's a legal football play. It's a cheap ass play. It's a dumb ass play. I think eventually they'll probably rule it out. But like, don't do it. You can't do it mid season, bro. It's just like
obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to be legislated against? Yes, but like, dude, Jalen Hurts also squats like 900 fucking pounds. Have you ever thought about maybe they have like? Maybe they did something, they put something together that, like, other teams fucking haven't. Have you seen the Patriots trying to do the tush push? I thought Mac Jones was going to get cut in half. Like, that team is good at something because of the way they drafted and assembled their fucking team. Are they exploiting a rule? And do I love that as a New England fan? Yeah, dude, that's porn to me. I love that shit. But, like, dude, if you don't want to get exploited by the tush push, don't let them into fourth and one. And when they're in fourth and one, pick the seven fattest guys you can find and put them on the field and try to stop it. Like, I'm in the mode right now where, like, I would be pulling offensive line. I'd have, like, seven fat guys. I'd have seven 300 fucking pound guys on the fucking field. I had seven. I might, you know what? I might go 11 fatties on one play, bro. I think, dude, you just stack them behind. You know how they have the quarterback and they have the two guys ready to grab each ass cheek and then shove him over the line to gain. What you do is you just get your own fatties in the backfield on the defensive backfield, and you shove your guys into the offensive backfield. See, you gotta play the same game. But then they'll throw one over the top and fucking somebody will catch a touchdown pass after they do a play action. But, dude, I just stop complaining about it. Nothing's going to fucking change. Like, it's stop it or shut up. Like, just log out of your Twitter or something. It makes me so angry. It's just like you going on Twitter and bitching about the tush push is going to make them do it more. And, like, you get shit on more. Like, just shut up. Shut up and wait till the offseason for it to get legislated out. And if it doesn't, who the fuck cares? Get better at it. Draft a quarterback that squats 1,000 pounds. Draft a generational center that's wicked good at doing it. Like, that's what the Eagles did. Why are you mad? You're not mad. You're not mad. You're jealous of the Eagles being able to pull it off. Anyway.
I hate the tush push. I have a completely different standpoint on you. The NFL has gone too offensive heavy in this league. And I don't care what you say. It's too much of an automatic play for the NFL. You're going to get it no matter where you are. And yes, I get it. The Patriots suck at a lot of things. Let's not include the Patriots in this discussion here, but you get a team that can actually execute it properly, like Philadelphia, who has done it for now 2 years. They didn't legislate it out last year when it was like, everybody was bitching about it. It's like, dude, every play, no matter what, they're going to get 2 yards, 3 yards, no matter what. Yes, they are elite for exploiting the rule and executing it to a T. Absolutely. I'll bitch about the Eagles doing it, but like I won't bitch that they're executing a legal play. I'm like, all right, here we go. Like, the game has gone too offensive, and this is a situation where the league has an opportunity to come in and be like, no, and not make a drastic change to the game, to change to the rules to benefit the defense more.
You can't push
the quarterback forward.
Offensive player from behind. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd argue it's the quarterback, because what are you gonna line up a running back behind him and get a running start there? I don't think that's gonna make a difference, because there's gonna be too much time that has gone by for the defense to get their push as well. And at that point, I don't care. But when you're lining somebody up literally a foot behind the quarterback, he snaps the ball and you got these two big dudes pushing him forward, and you got a quarterback that can actually execute a quarterback sneak every single time. I mean, there's no stopping.
Just imagine putting like Trent Williams behind your nose tackle to like shove him into the Eagles' backfield. Like,
I don't think it'd make a difference. Yeah. I really don't think it'd make a difference.
I just want to see the car accident. Like, that would be so much mass on one field.
I'd love to see a team to try it. I'd love to see them try it. And if they could stop it, there you go. There's your counter. And somebody's figured it out. Now everybody can copycat. It's a copycat league. Everybody can.
Well, somebody's going to figure it out, and the Eagles are going to be fucked is what's going to happen. It's going to be a really tight game in the playoffs. The Eagles are down 2 points on the verge. All they need is a first down. They're in fucking field goal territory. Or the other team has no timeouts. They need one touchdown to run the clock out. They're on their own side of the field. They go for the tush push. They fuck it up, and the other team kicks a field goal, and they fucking win the game. That's how it's going to end. That, if they don't legislate it out, that's how it's going to end. The other thing I want to say is Nick Sirianni, brother, shut up. Just shut up, dude. Every time that dude opens his fucking mouth, I want to punch him through the fucking screen I'm watching it on.
Or cry, it's like, during the national anthem.
Dude, I cry it a lot. I get goosebumps when fucking Fat Bottom Girls by Queen comes on, dude. I get shook.
I get shooken up.
But it's like, dude, the best part of your organization is Howie Roseman and how he put the team together, dude. Giving up 2 first-round picks for A.J. Brown, drafting Devontae Smith, drafting Jalen Carter, drafting one of the best front sevens in football, getting fucking Jalen Hurts in the second round, like signing DeAndre Swift. Like, there's a lot of head coaches that Nick Sirianni that could be, And I just, he's the classic fucking does nothing, gets credit, and acts like the man kind of guy.
He's got a lot of talent on that team. He's got a lot of talent that team. And they showed it. They showed it on Sunday night. And the Philadelphia Eagles have been a team this year that has been questioned for some of their wins, saying like, hey, maybe they don't look as good as they did last year. They've kind of squeaked some of these wins out against some bad competition. And well, they certainly made a statement, I would say, on Sunday night, beating Miami 31-17. Miami's one of the favorites to come out of the AFC as of today. And they kind of made them look, you know, middle of the road, middler. And
Miami got Tyreek Hill. That Tyreek Hill touchdown where he turned on the Jets to get under the ball. That looked like video games on the TV. It really did. It was insane. I have they quote unquote limited Tyreek Hill to 11 catches for 88 yards and a touchdown. When he's not, I don't know. I feel like if you somehow allow Tyreek Hill to catch the ball 11 times, but he only gets 88 yards and a touchdown, that's a win. You know what I mean? And it's kind of goes back to like what we were talking about with Buffalo. Like you shut down that, like Jalen Waddle's good, dude. He's still a young player, but like, dude, you shut down Tyreek Hill and that, and Tua kind of gets scrambled. They have no slot receiver. They have no blank. They have no security blanket tight end or anything like that. A-Chain's hurt, so it's kind of all on Mozart. They didn't really run the ball a lot or well. So, yeah, kind of a lot went into that. And I think the Dolphins are a classic. If you get them off platform, if you get them off schedule, if you get them off of their game plan, I don't think they have a. I think McDaniels is a good coach, but I just don't think they have the dogs to do the in-game kind of like maneuvering or the in-game game planning anymore or at all.
More indicative on Miami or Philly? What would you say?
This says more. Let me see. This says more about Miami, I think, because I think this is the quintessential game that Miami loses. You know what I mean? You hold them under 20 points, you hold Tyreek Hill under 100 yards, and you lose the game. So,
I would go the opposite route just because I think Philly kind of put an end to, hey, you haven't beaten anybody. And they go out and they beat Miami pretty handedly in this one. I mean, it was kind of over. I don't want to say it was over early, but like they were out to a big lead early. And they were
the only time you thought it was going to get close is when Tyree caught that touchdown pass. And I think it made it like, it was like 17-24, 17-21 or something like that. It made it like a one score game. That was like the only time he really felt like a threat at all from Miami.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how each team responds next week. Miami's playing New England, as we talked about. And, you know, Philly's got who they got coming up next week. They got the Commanders. So they got a pretty, I would say, an easy game for them. We'll get into that when we talk about our locks moving forward. But I do want to move on to this one. You know, Philly was a team that was undefeated last week as well. They went down. Or not Philly. 49ers, sorry. 49ers were an undefeated team last week that went down. And, you know, they had another matchup last night, Monday Night Football, against the Minnesota Vikings, who were 2-4 going into this game. And it was a little bit of much of the same for the 49ers. They kind of seemed like they weren't themselves. We'll say that. And Minnesota, credit to them, they came out. They ended up getting the win 22-17. Brock Purdy threw two interceptions in this one. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey was banged up coming into the day. He actually had himself a pretty good, you know, game for himself there. But just one of my big takeaway from this is, are you worried about Brock Purdy? Are you worried about him and, you know, leading that talented San Francisco offense? You know, we were talking about them a couple of weeks ago as a kind of a clear-cut runaway NFC champion. And now we're seeing some holes in the armor. So what do you think about Brock Purdy?
I think this kind of goes to a more overarching kind of quarterback trend that kind of goes back to the last game that we talked about in Tua in the Dolphins, and then even before that with Mac Jones and the Patriots. These young quarterbacks are products of their environment.
When he's on time, on schedule, and everything's working, Brock Purdy looks amazing. But when he needs to make a play outside of the bounds or the parameters of the play that Kyle Shanahan calls in, it's going to be a little squirrely, dude. He doesn't have a huge arm. He's not super athletic. He wasn't a great college quarterback running around making plays. He's a system guy. He has all pros on the offensive line. He has all pros on the outside. He has all pros in his backfield. And all he has to do is play point guard and put the ball in the correct place, which he's good at. He's good at doing that. That's people misconstrue when people say that with saying they're a bad quarterback. No, Brock Purdy is good at playing quarterback in that situation. But when you get him outside of that situation, it's going to look fucking horrible. Like those two picks he threw were horrendous. Like you see guys like throwing those picks in their first couple like games in the league, not in their second year while you're a 5-1 or 5-2 team. Yeah, I think this game says a hell of a lot more about the Niners than it does the Vikings. I don't think the Vikings did anything fucking special. I think they were just opportunistic. I think Kirk Cousins finally put a couple some critics to bed when talking about how he plays in primetime. 35 of 45, 378, and two touchdowns and a pick. Pick was kind of bad, but I mean the pick wasn't that bad. It was kind of taken away from his wide receiver, even though he wasn't super open. But San Francisco's a tough team to read. I think when they get firing on all cylinders, they're basically impossible to beat. But I think when they're the kind of team that you got kind of one chink in their armor and they're kind of going to go sideways there. They kind of remind me of a rich man's instead of a poor man's, but a rich man's Miami. If you get the 49ers kind of off schedule playing from behind, I think you can kind of make some noise there. Kind of exactly what Minnesota did.
Absolutely. And I'm not ready to write off San Francisco yet. I think that they're going to write the ship there. Not. You know, I mean, Deebo Samuel was out in this one, so missing one of their key offensive weapons. Christian McCaffrey was dinged up. He only averaged 3 yards a carry in this one. He did have 3 catches for 51 yards and a touchdown, including a long reception for 35 yards. But I think if they stay healthy and they're able to go, then they're a team that they're not going to go away easy. I still like them to come out of the NFC. I still like them against Philadelphia. You know, I mean, they would have beat them last year if Brock Purdy wasn't throwing with a noodle arm, you know, in that playoff game. So we'll see what happens as they go forward. I mean, that's 2 games in a row, Brock Purdy's first 2 losses in the NFL as a starting quarterback. So we'll see where they go from there. So that brings us into week eight, and we get some big matchups coming up here in this one. Joe, I'll give it to you. We got our picks, so take it away.
Unfortunately, this podcast thrives on honesty and accountability. So we will start with last week's picks. It was a bloodbath, to say the least. I lost a pint. Bears lost half a pint. Kojak even got pricked. It was bad. I went 0-3. Detroit +3. Absolute bloodbath. Rams -3. Another. So I'm going to pick against the Steelers again this week, but I feel a little bit better about it. But the Rams -3, that was a loss. Washington -2 was it. All right. So Washington -2. Okay. So the Redskins are on the goal line with no time left. They throw an out route to Jahan Dotson. And he fucking drops it. So I am getting pretty fucking frustrated with some guys doing some shit in the NFL, losing me some money. Anyway, brings us to Burge's picks. He had Miami. Actually, so full disclosure, we both had Detroit +3, but we only counted it once because it was my lock. So he had Miami -2 as his lock. We just went over that. They fucking lost outright. And then our only win of the day comes from KC -5.5. That was a good pick by Burge. And then we had the under 39.5 in New Orleans, Jacksonville, that overhit in that game. So Kojak's 1 pick for the week will end up going 0-1. We're 1-5 for the week. 1-5 for the week brings us down to 8-8-1 overall. We're 2-3 in our locks. Overall, I think that's pretty good, for being honest. 2 random guys who just started a podcast who aren't really sharp going 500 over 3 weeks of picks. I think that's a win. I think it might be time to start fading the BTP podcast, if we're being completely honest. But I think I've got some confidence in this week's picks. So I'm going to start with my picks this week. My two picks that I like Seattle -3 at home versus Cleveland. You got a lot of you don't have a bunch of clarity at the quarterback position in Cleveland right now. Deshaun Watson's head hit the turf on Sunday, and he looked like he did not know. He didn't have a single clue where the fuck he was. He looked up. He goes, "Why are all of these people looking at me?" But yeah, so he's probably going to go get a massage on Sunday. We'll see a little bit more PJ Walker. My other game, my other pick that I like is a team we talked a lot about today as well, is the Eagles. Eagles -6.5 versus Washington. Even though I respect Ron Rivera as a coach and I think he's a great leader of men, you heard some sound clips coming out of that that locker room after the game that were not things that you want to hear as a fan of the franchise. I forget, Sweat or somebody. It was one of their defensive front seven guys. Regardless, he was basically like, "I'm sick and tired of fucking losing. This fucking sucks." And I'm like, "Dog, I feel you." And that's why I'm fading your ass this weekend. I got Philly -6.5. My lock of the week, I am going to fade the fade that I should have faded last week. I'm going to go Jacksonville money line at Pittsburgh. It's -125. Jacksonville's laying a point. So if you think about it, in different terms, Pittsburgh is probably getting a point or a point and a half for being at home. So you're looking at Jacksonville on a true line being at like a 2 or 2.5 point favorite. So I think money line might be a safe pick here. What I will say is that Mike Tomlin is a underdog cover and outright winning monster. But I do think Jacksonville has a little good thing going right now. I think they're going to get some good weather up in the mid-Atlantic on Sunday, which would be conducive to a passing game. I still think Kenny Pickett sucks. I still think they only have one true offensive weapon in Kenny Pickens until Deontay Johnson is 100% healthy. I'm not a huge fan of Najee Harris, but I think Jacksonville goes into Pittsburgh, gets the job done this weekend, and we can stop talking about Pittsburgh as some kind of dark horse or some punchy kind of fun team to watch. What do you got this weekend, Birch?
All right. So my first pick, maybe the last time I go with it, I'm going with my boys, New England Patriots, +9.5 down in Miami against the Dolphins. Week two, when the Patriots played the Dolphins, they had the Dolphins kind of on the brink. They had a chance to win the game. They kind of got in their own way and lost. It's kind of been the MO of the season this year. I like the New England Patriots to limit what the Dolphins are able to do offensively. And I like that what the offense showed me this week, I like them to kind of build on it. I'm not saying that they're going to be all of a sudden this epic unit that's going to, you know, wow people as you're watching them play. But I do like them to limit what Miami does best, and that is Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. I like them to limit their production in this game. I know Tua Tagovailoa is – you know, undefeated against the Patriots here going forward, but I give me the 9.5 with the Patriots. I think it's going to be a close game. It may be decided by a touchdown. Patriots may lose that game, but I, you know, get 9.5 points going into, you know, Miami. I like that as a pick for me.
Is that a road game or the home game for the Patriots?
That is a road game. That is down in Miami, where the Patriots have traditionally not fared too well. But again, I like them.
What's the total number on that game? That'd be an interesting total.
The over-under is 47. Over-under is 47.
Oh, yeah. So, you know what, dude? Yeah, I would take the under and Patriots in that. Yes. And the Patriots with the points in that game, I think. Divisional opponent. Yeah, I agree.
I think the Patriots will play them tough. I think that they will keep the game close. They may not win in the end outright in the end, but I do like them getting the 9.5 points there.
I can see the Patriots losing this game like 27-20, 24-20, something like that.
Yeah, something really close, maybe a last-second field goal or
21-17, something like that.
Last-second touchdown to win it late in the game. My next pick here is I'm going to take the Houston Texans -3 on the road in Carolina. Carolina this year has been a dumpster fire. Let's just call it what it is. They have not been good. And I really like what I have seen out of CJ Stroud and the Houston Texans offense with Tank Dell, Nico Collins, those guys. Devin Singletary and Damian Pierce running the ball for them. I really like what I've seen. As if you've listened to previous episodes of this podcast, we love CJ Stroud, you know, his future in the league and all that. And I like them to just, I like them even laying 3 points on the road. I like them to, you know, win that game outright. And so, yeah, that's my next pick. Houston -3 on the road in Carolina. My lock of the week is going to be on Thursday Night Football. Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the road up in Orchard Park against the Buffalo Bills. We talked about the Buffalo Bills a lot
earlier. This isn't a Tampa Bay pick. This is a fade the Bills pick. Don't get it anybody. Don't get it fucking twisted. Anybody out there? This isn't a pro Tampa Bay pick. This is an anti Buffalo.
It absolutely is. Buffalo is reeling from injuries. They just lost Dawson Knox. I think it was yesterday the news came out about him. He's going to miss some time. That team is decimated with injuries. Tampa Bay at times this year has looked really, really good with Baker Mayfield playing playing quarterback for them. They do still have a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball there. I like them laying the 8.5 points there. Again, they may not win the game. Getting the 8.5. I'm sorry. Yes. Sorry. Getting the 8.5. They may not win the game, but I like them to keep this game close and to, you know, be within that 8.5 window. So that's my lock of the week is the Bucs.
What's the total? What's the total on that game?
Do you have over under 42? Over under is 42. I probably like the over there. I like the over there if I was going
to
pick.
I usually like to go unders and underdogs is kind of a good pair there, but I don't know. Baker's been playing good this year. I think obviously Tampa Bay has enough weapons.
Absolutely. So be interesting to see. I'm rooting for my lock to win because I root for the demise of the Buffalo Bills on a weekly basis. So you can call it bias. You can call it whatever you want, but screw you, Buffalo. You deserve this. You deserve it. Kojak, what do you got? What do you got for a pick?
Yep. This I got some player props for y'all. I like Devontae.
Do you put an S on the player props with an S?
I did. I didn't mean like to do that.
More than one. Prop. All right.
I like Devontae Smith anytime and Amon St. Brown anytime. But I'm gonna parlay them together. Devontae, he's got almost 500 yards on the season, 2 TDs. And then Amon St. Brown's obviously, you know, he's real good out there. Detroit's at 600 yards, 3 touchdowns so far. They both average about 12 yards per catch. The Lions aren't out just yet for the player props, but I'm definitely going to parlay those two together.
So it's Devontae Adams and Amon Ross St. Brown.
Devontae Smith.
Oh.
Buddy.
I like it. I don't know if I like the parlay there. I'm not,
not a parlay.
Parlay.
No, hate,
you said you were going to parlay them together.
Hell yeah.
I'm not a parlay guy.
Oh.
So we're making all right. Guy. We're actually, what we're going to do here is we're going to do the thing called give the person enough rope to hang themselves. That's a great pick, Coach Jack.
Listen, I'm going to come back this time next week and tell you guys how much fucking money I won, and you guys are going to do shit about it.
I want a four-unit play. I want a four-unit play on that fucking
asshole.
All right. Well, there you guys have it. We got everything for you. We got the picks. We got the player props. You know, fade us, slam us, no matter how you want to do it. Pause. Let us hear about it. Let us hear about it.
Resume. We're good. That was funny. That was good as hell.
Oh, man. Well, slam us if you want. Bait us if you want.
I can't do it, bro. Fucking end this shit.
All right, all right. I think that's a good time to plug it up here.
I can't, dog. I can't.
You can't edit this out. It's going to make it the final, final cut, baby.
It's definitely staying. I'm sending it right to Daigle.
Do it. So do it. Well, as always, you guys can follow us on the Twitter machine, X machine, whatever you want to call it, at @BTP_podcast_. I'm on the X machine at Birch the Goalie. If you want to slam me, hit me up. And Joe Scherr.
Please don't slam me.
If you want to. Joe Scherr is at @_JuicyJew. I won't even say it. And Kojak, if you want to fade him or slam him, @Allen13Brennan. You guys got any? You guys got any final thoughts before we plug this thing up and end it?
No, dude. Oh, I just can't wait to get slammed this weekend.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, everyone.
Later.